Jamal once again to Dual Roads in episode 89.
I'm back, bitches.
Apparently, Chad's just going to go ahead and introduce himself. Before we get proper introductions, now he wants to talk for some reason.
No, see, you that was like your title, and then I was the tagline. That's how that worked.
Fair enough.
Now you go back to doing your introduction.
We've already passed the introduction phase. You interrupted it. Now we're introducing the people. And we have Chad, who won't, for once, won't be quiet long enough for other people to talk.
I do enjoy the sound of my own voice.
We have Daniel.
I have to apologize because I'm not next gen.
And we have Jason.
How's it going?
So yes, as of recording, today is the launch of Nintendo's Wii U, the first next generation of video game consoles. However you want to use that term, it's Nintendo's next
generation. I don't know how you define generation, but listen, the Wii U is like
Nintendo. Not like the Wii, let's put it that way.
The Nintendo 64 has better graphics than the Wii U, confirmed. I one up and opened the other up, and they look like circus. So they're the same.
I do love the fact that was one of the first things people did. They got their systems at midnight, and there was a live stream of somebody taking the system apart to see the innards.
Did someone blend it yet?
I have no idea.
That's been coming, right?
I'm sure we'll get stuff over the next week or so, since that's what, I mean, it's either that or you sit around for an hour downloading a day one patch to get the system's actual OS, which is very special indeed.
Yeah, I think I'd rather the blender.
Is that what makes it next gen?
It's something, you know, we all wanted Nintendo to catch up to PS3 and 360. They did it.
They did it with a PS3, definitely, didn't they?
But you can watch the progress of the download on the gamepad while you watch TV.
Okay, that is a nice touch, but it's still pointless.
Listen, guys, the GameCube had internet connectivity. Like, I'm not losing my mind here. It's great that it has internet, but that's old.
Technically,
listen,
it did, but
listen, Wii U, no good.
But yeah, I believe none of us actually. Well, then you can't pick it up.
No, I can't.
And I got no money in the bank to get it anytime soon, so that's going probably next year, sometime around tax returns. Maybe next week. I know Anthony's picking up one, but he's actually, I think he's not getting his until like Monday or Tuesday of this week because he's out of town doing something else. And Martin's having cold feet about his pre-order, so I don't know what's going on with that. He canceled his pre-order, but I think he's still going back and forth on whether or not he wants it. It doesn't help when Zombie U seems to be getting really, really mixed reviews.
Cool.
I've said this before. I've always preferred a game that got those type of reviews because it doesn't really mean you have to pay to figure out for yourself, since there's no general consensus if it's a great game or a terrible game or a game that's going to make you stab your eyes out and kill your neighbors.
Do you need a game to do that?
I wouldn't know. Let's go with that. But the Wii U, while it is a big story, huge ordeal, isn't the only major thing that's been out these past couple of weeks. We had last week was all dedicated to the Wii. So there's been 2 weeks of major releases, including Halo 4, Call of Duty, what is this, 8, 9?
Black Ops 2.
Call of Duty, who gives a shit what number it is, because you're probably going to fucking buy it anyway.
Call of Duty, worst acronym ever.
Why is it the worst acronym ever?
Because you save two fucking letters on the acronym by acronymizing.
I think it's more about spelling it out than syllables, more importantly.
Well, I was going to say, you save a lot more because technically it's Call of Duty, so it's like when you save drops, people know.
You know how you can save time? Not fucking talking about Call of Duty. There you go.
It's very hard not to talk about Call of Duty. It is still the biggest brand, one of the biggest brands in gaming.
Unfortunately.
As Activision taught it out this week, it made, $500 million opening day, actually.
Fuck.
Which I still think is a terrible metric for video games, because I don't know many other entertainment industries where the entry price is as high. Like, you don't pay $50 for a movie ticket. Not yet, anyhow. I mean, New York City's probably going in that direction.
Unless you're seeing it in IMAX 3D.
And not only that, it's a lot harder to see a movie on opening day than it is to buy a video game on opening day.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean,
I don't know about that.
We actually have to go somewhere to see a movie, whereas you don't have to do anything to buy a video game.
I mean, for you, I mean, most people still have to go to stores to buy video games and stuff. Like,
people buy things in store?
I guess online counts as well.
You can still pre-order movie tickets and stuff, like, you also have to show up at the movie theater, like, 6 hours beforehand to not get stuck 3 inches in front of the screen.
Yeah, it depends on the movie and the time you go. Opening weekend, Friday, Saturday nights are usually insane. But
Skyfall on opening night was ridiculous.
Dude, Skyfall, like, a few days after was still ridiculous.
I was lucky enough to see Skyfall the day before. It opened in IMAX early, so there was maybe 20 people when I went to see it in IMAX. So that was awesome.
We had a Halloween special showing of The Shining in our local cinema, and I went to see it. And I left like 10 minutes before it was set to show, and I was stuck up front, and it was horrible. I'm not talking about the film. The film's great, but
The film is equally terrible. Those creepy little girls. God damn it!
Isn't this a gaming podcast?
Yeah.
No.
At times.
It's a podcast, maybe.
To tie it in with Skyfall, the Skyfall DLC actually came out for 007 Legends after the movie released on the PS.
Did it make the game good?
No, it made the game worse, actually. But it did not.
Do explain.
Well, one of my complaints I mentioned when I reviewed the game is the fact that the game doesn't have an actual ending. So I thought that was something they would add with the Skyfall DLC. There's still no ending, and now there's no reason. Like, there's nothing to say, oh, we're going to add another Bond game that actually ends it.
But why would you retroactively add a Bond film DLC? I don't know.
Well, that's my point, though. The whole idea
it starts with a scene in Skyfall, so it should end with one.
Yeah, but it doesn't end. Like, there's no credits or anything. It's just like the mission ends and you go back to the main menu. That's it. No credits, no...
What?
Yeah. When I say there's no ending, it's literally no ending. Like, it's not even... It's like, okay, good job, here's your stats, main menu. That's
wow.
It. And here's the thing. I've seen Skyfall before I played this DLC, and after seeing Skyfall, I don't know why this DLC was held back. Because it has... You know, like Daniel mentioned, the start of 007 Legends is actually the start of Skyfall. One of the missions in the Skyfall DLC is what leads up to that scene. So you already know how it ends, but it's like what leads up to it. And then it takes a random scene from the middle of the film when he goes after the assassin in Hong Kong.
That was a sick scene.
It's an awesome scene. It's a terrible game. Because
God, that cinematography.
No, that movie's so beautiful.
All the cinematography in that movie. It's really well shot.
You'd think the leader of the fucking covert ops of, like, England would know better than to shine a flashlight around in the middle of the night when you're running away from
people. Doesn't everyone do that, though?
It wasn't her. I guess they couldn't see the building that they were walking towards in the giant fire. But
really? The guy who's lived there his entire life doesn't know his way around?
I don't know why he was still living there, but that's... besides the point, back to Skyfall.
God, that pissed me off. Anyway, did we do a Skyfall podcast?
Huh?
Did we do a Skyfall podcast?
No, not yet. So what happens with the DLC, with the Skyfall stage, is it turns it into a boss battle. And this boss battle is, you know, like how it's the giant gas rooms in the... The movie. It's a boss battle where you have, like, it's all glass, and you have to hide behind these narrow things and, like, shoot this guy. I swear, I emptied my PP. You already have your pistol. That's all you can use to get on that stage. And I emptied it twice. to finish this boss battle. It's not fun. You hide because his gun kills you in 3 shots.
Oh, nice.
So you have like this very narrow thing, and you basically just have to hide out and like duck in and get like 2 or 3 shots, hide out, and it's really just tedious. It goes on for about 10 minutes.
Well,
and that's
all too long.
Yeah, and that's all the stage is. There's like nothing else. Like halfway through, he runs upstairs and you have to chase him again. Same exact thing. Yeah, so it still added no ending. It added a worse end boss battle, and then it added a motorcycle chase, which is really, I hate chases like this where it's, what do you call it, prearranged or whatever, so the things always happen in a certain order. So what happens is if you slow down or speed up, the game has to find some way to catch up to you. So usually what happens is a car, like if you're moving too fast, a car would just come out at 150 miles per hour and they don't have any animation for it. So it looks like the car's just gliding towards its destination.
Oh,
it's a mess. It's an awful, awful experience. So I downgraded my recommendation of Skyfall as a run to if you're a Bond fan over a weekend to just avoiding completely.
Oh wow.
It's a really terrible game, so do not buy.
That's coming from someone very obsessed with Bond, too.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, often fans of something are harsher than the critics of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true, but, I mean, like, I would have accepted this game if it was purely fan service, but it doesn't even get that right. It's a piss-poor first-person shooter that doesn't even do honor to the Bond license, so.
Which is kind of the theme of it, since Activision got a hold of it.
I GoldenEye Wii and Reloaded, I assume. I haven't played that, I assume. So.
Where is Everything or Nothing 2?
That was Bloodstone, and that didn't turn out too hot either.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you have a studio that's only made racing games try to make a third-person action game.
Yeah, what can you do? Activision. So, has anybody played Ops or Halo 4 or Paper Mario?
Played Halo 4.
You want to talk about? Yeah, you didn't accept my invite yesterday, jerk.
Oh, I was probably in a room with people already.
Wow, way to be passive aggressive. I'm so not accept his invite. Dick.
Yeah, I don't know. Halo 4 is obviously 343 Industries' first game, and I mean, it's very impressive. I mean, first of all, the music is just phenomenal. Like, I've multiple times have just sat on the main menu and just listened to the music, or like left it on while I was checking Twitter or something like that. Like, it's so good. I never buy soundtracks. I'm going to buy this soundtrack. It's incredible. And the visual fidelity matches up pretty well to the audio fidelity, too. Like, the first level, you're going through, you know, basically the wreckage of the ship that he's drifting off in at the end of Halo 3. And it's just, I just stopped and looked around like so many times. Like, I couldn't believe that they're still getting this much juice out of the 360. Like, this might be the best looking 360 game to date. What is it now? 7 years into the life? It's just crazy. And it holds up that way throughout the campaign. Like, the art is also up to par with, like, just the pure graphic muscle. Like, you have all the stuff, like the UNSC ships and the different areas around the Forerunner planet that they're on. And then there's the actual Forerunner architecture. There's all the Covenant stuff. Like, it's just, there's so much variety in the visuals, and all of it is at an incredible level of quality. Like, and like, really, enough can be said about that. As for the gameplay, it's, if you like Halo, you're going to love this. If you didn't like Halo, then you're not going to like it. I mean, they did a really good job, and I do think they did a better job going back to the kind of like sandboxiness of the original Halo, better than they have. Reach had a pretty good like sandbox quality within the levels too, but it even though the levels are linear, they don't feel like it. You know, like there's a lot of like open areas that you go through within each level. The only complaint I really have about the level design is that it is really formulaic at times, where you'll just be like, let me think of a non-spoiler example. There's several missions where you have to hit several switches or, you know, destroy several shield generators or something like that. And so those levels, or those parts of those levels, essentially boil down to, okay, you're going to go through this one area and then do the same thing on, like, a mirror version of it over there. And it's just, obviously, people are, like, Covenant are going to drop out as soon as you get there. And stuff like that. So it is at times really formulaic and predictable, but the actual gunplay is, I don't know, as solid as ever. And the new Forerunner weapons, and they have a few new weapons for UNSC and Covenant, but the new Forerunner weapons also help to mix that up a bit. And the Forerunner enemy AI is much different than fighting any of the Covenant forces. Sometimes to an annoying degree, but it does mix up the gameplay.
Okay, I will add one to the soundtrack. It was kind of funny. One of my college friends got Halo 4, and he was telling us that he's not a Halo fan. He's only played Halo 2 before this, and I was asking him why he got Halo 4, and he said he heard the soundtrack to the game beforehand, and it was so good that he decided to pick up the game for it.
Yeah, like, oh my god, the soundtrack is good. Like, I really can't stress that enough. It's just bliss on my eardrums.
The other thing I will say, I will agree with you with the PlayStation game. The only thing is, I think they overdo the lighting just a bit. There's times where, like, the screen's just, like, blasted in light sources, and it gets really annoying at times.
I see where you're coming from with that. At the same time, I don't think it's anywhere near as distracting as, like, overdoing bloom lighting like a lot of games do.
That's true. It's just that, especially there's, like, one multiplayer stage, which is a... Because a lot of it, you know, because of the Forerunners, it has a lot more metallic feel to it.
Yeah.
And there's, like, certain stages where it's really hard to see people because it's kind of reflective and shiny and bright. It's not a deal breaker at all. I just noticed that when I was playing, like, the campaign with friends, at times stuff would just be right in your face, and it's really just annoying to me.
Yeah.
I did like the introduction of the main villain. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh, that's what I forgot to talk about. The general writing and plot of the game is really
crap. Okay.
No, well, it sets at the very beginning. It sets up the plot really well and poses some really like interesting questions. Never really gets around to those questions. And you know, the way the villain introduced, yeah, is really cool, but then he's always only at a distance for the second half of the game, like after he shows up, and the ending just completely falls apart from a narrative standpoint. Like, it's just bad. It's stupid. And
so there's actually, like, a singular villain then?
Yeah.
That's kind of... Like,
and I mean, he can, and he obviously controls a lot of the other enemies that you face. I don't know if I missed it or they just didn't do a good job, but like I felt like I didn't understand why the Covenant, I didn't understand the Covenant's role since they were supposed, that war was supposed to be over, until like after I finished and I went back and read about it online and found out it's like a sectionalist group of Covenant, not like the main Covenant. So that's why. But I don't know if I just missed that in the beginning or they just did.
They don't tell you.
Yeah, and kind of going on that, they go a lot into a lot of Halo lore from like the books and like the anime and stuff like that. That they almost like it feels like they assume you know sometimes. Like apparently, the main villain was a character in one of the or in the Forerunner series of books. And so, like, they just talk about him like, oh, he's the didact. And you're like, well, why are you calling him that? Like, what does that mean? Like, you know.
Well, I assume they think there's like a starting point that you're this big Halo fan. Because I've only done the first three.
Most of the mainstream Halo fans probably only play the games. It's only the people that are really hardcore into it that are going to do all this other stuff. Which, by the way, if you haven't, go watch Forward Unto Dawn on YouTube or Halo Waypoint. It's phenomenal.
That is pretty good. I was going to say, I'm not trying to follow the story at all. I tried to explain it to a friend who hasn't played the game, and honestly, it's just like Katana barking orders at me to go in a certain direction so far, and I'm like, whatever, as long as she has a waypoint.
It's kind of bossy.
Other than that, it gets a bunch of jibber jabber to me, and I'm like, you know what, I don't pay hell for the story. I'll go through the campaign on Heroic,
yeah,
or Nori with friends, and then I'll mostly focus on online Spartan Ops and war games. I will say, I wasn't really following this game beforehand. I did find it weird that right now there aren't many free-for-all modes.
Oh, in the multiplayer? Yeah.
Yeah.
The multiplayer is kind of a interesting thing. I agree. There's not that many free-for-all modes. Or there's not a pure free-for-all mode. Like, the main free-for-all mode seems to be Regicide, where the leader... Like, killing the leader gets you more points than a normal kill would.
Yeah, I mean...
Which is an interesting twist. It helps, like, balance the games out and keep them really competitive.
Yeah, it's like Juggernaut, kind of. But yeah, it's, like, there's no... Like, it's either that or you play Flood, which is basically this game's version of Zombies.
Flood is my favorite mode. And just for listeners that don't know, it's like, you start out... There's two people who are Flood... Yeah, it's like a zombie infection mode, or like the new spin on it, and everyone else is Spartans with shotguns. And the Flood are like super agile, can jump super high, and have these like really powerful thrusters, and then basically a sword arm.
I did not know about the thrusters when I played. So like the first time somebody like zoomed halfway across the stage, it freaked me out. But that is a pretty sweet perk. I also like the Night Shield. I think that's an awesome perk. It's like a more skilled base armor lock.
Yeah, and the Hardlight Shield I discovered, it's really good in team games where you just have the guy with the Hardlight Shield kind of fending off somebody who's going after him, and one of your teammates can just basically
shoot at them.
It's that seems to be the most practical use of that number.
Yeah, and it takes pretty decent damage. I mean, you can almost get like an entire clip. I mean, it also kind of protects you from grenades if they're in front of you. And you also are protected from the sword. The downside to using it, of course, is that once you deactivate it, there's like a delay between when you switch back to your weapon, so you are vulnerable for that. I do enjoy that sprint is now default, and everybody has it.
Yes. Way too long coming. I remember them promising that for Halo 2, but that's a welcome addition. I think the multiplayer suite is kind of Call of Duty at this point. Oh yeah.
So, this time I have not played this game except for maybe like 20 minutes on the multiplayer at an event. So. You can hate me all you want for it, but there are a few things that Halo 4 does right, and like, so I would agree with you about the graphics. The game is so beautiful, and I was like, Bungie, come on, you know, why haven't you done this, you know? It looks so good. I wish I could kind of see it being rendered in front of me, but I'm not a fan of much else, to be honest. The writing of characters is great, and that's another thing that I wish Bungie had done, is actually sort of put some interesting characters in there, you know? I was at first kind of apprehensive about Chief talking a lot more, but he says things that he would say anyway, and he's not too emotional, but you can see it sort of creeping out at times when Cortana goes crazy.
Yeah, Chief's really well written.
Yeah, I love the sort of chemistry that they put in between him and Cortana. I mean, it was kind of there, like, in ounces in the previous Halo games, but you can see, like, they really have some sort of relationship. What with the whole who's the machine thing. the plot, like, and how they're just like, here's the extra Halo lore stuff. I wasn't a fan of that, but I haven't been a fan of any of the extra sort of backstory stuff that 343 have kind of introduced. It just seems like they're just like, they've got a list of questions and they're going, yep, we've answered that, we're answering that, we're answering that, and here's a massive exposition cutscene in the middle of the game, you know, and I don't know. The best thing about the Forerunners for me is that you didn't really know anything about them, and they're just going, oh, look, we're answering this, this, and this. I'm not a fan of the perks in the multiplayer. I'm not a fan of the sort of pseudo kill streaks in the multiplayer. I wish they were gone. The Prometheans, they don't really seem to have, like, a purpose, like weapon-wise. Like, so there was a sort of, barrier between the Covenant and the human weapons where you use the Covenant weapons to take shields down or for more gimmicky gameplay, like the Needler, and you use the human weapons if you want something that's tried and true. Whereas the Promethean weapons, they don't really seem to feel either, and it just seems like, oh, here's a shotgun, but you thought it was a normal shotgun, but it's not because the bullets ricochet. I don't know, it just seems a bit derivative. Other than that, it just seems like from the campaign, it just seems like what they've gone and done is they've played the other Halo games and gone, right, so they have a tank level and they have a level where everything's blowing up and you're in a vehicle driving away from it, and they have a level where you're in a ghost, and they have a level with loads of warthogs in it, and
There's a also a level in a jet, which is fucking
awesome.
Yeah, and
they did that cool thing in Halo Reach with the jet, so we've got to do that again, you know? And it just seems like they're just going down a checklist and just ticking these boxes, and it's like, so you're adamant on telling us it's a new trilogy, but where's the new gameplay? Like, instead of just doing the old stuff again, give us some really cool new stuff. It is the definition of safe. And, like, it looks to me that for the first time ever, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is doing more to change up its gameplay than Halo is, and that kind of upsets me. Because it looks like, from the multiplayer standpoint, it was kind of like, imagine, like, The Simpsons, where you've got Homer in his garden mowing the lawn, and you've got Ned Flanders in his garden mowing the lawn his way, and then sort of maybe one peeks over the fence and takes a look at what the other's doing and goes, oh, I think I should do that. That's kind of what 343 have been doing with Call of Duty, and I don't like it. Like, the whole point of Halo for me was it wasn't Call of Duty, and now they're just like, oh, let's just borrow this and let's put a bit of that in.
I get where you're coming from. I still feel like distinctly the game plays like Halo. It has none of the Call of Duty trappings in it.
In the multiplayer, but not in the campaign.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, the multiplayer will be the part where I think a lot of people invest time into. And I think a lot of it is just like, you know, like how loadouts are done now. I mean, it's the same thing as Reach, except now you get to design your own, or how you get points for everything. You get points for assists, you get points for deaths, headshots, you get points for holding a point, hope being king, not being king, killing the king and all that other stuff. I get that, but it's not like, I feel like it's not.
My biggest problem is, where is the new gameplay stuff? Like, it's either stuff that we've already seen in every other Halo game ever, or it's stuff that we're seeing in other games, you know? Well, we're not seeing anything new, really.
Well, keep in mind, too, like, this is the studio's first game, and they're coming off
happen?
A huge legacy.
But if you're going to give them an excuse like that, what's going to happen is next generation...
No, but I mean, they're making
around.
Little
They go,
tweaks.
Oh,
they're
we had to play it safe because it's our first game on the new console, and then we're going to be at the end of the trilogy before we see anything new.
I don't see this as a problem at all. Like, yeah, they're playing it safe, but if they completely change it up, it's not going to be Halo. And I think
and
they
have,
are making little tweaks that have made it a little better, things like you can sprint all the time. The jet level is completely different than Reach. It's not like an open space combat. It's more like a corridor, like Star
yeah,
Fox
I've,
shoot.
I've bought Halo 2, which just had little tweaks from Halo 1, and Halo 3, which had little tweaks from Halo 2, and Halo Reach, which had little tweaks from Halo 3. I don't want little tweaks anymore. You know, if you're going to say, oh, we've got a new trilogy, we're really proud of this new trilogy, we're going to do something new for the new trilogy. Yeah, you're doing something new with the story, and, I kind of like it, you know, with the whole character-based stuff. You know, it's kind of cool. But gameplay is just the same. And they've got loads of employees that used to work at Bungie, so I'm not taking that, oh, they're a new studio, it's their first game. That's not an excuse.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but at the same time, I didn't feel that way. I acknowledged, it's a little bit on the safe side, but I had so much fun with it. I thought it was really well produced, and, I don't mind it being, more Halo, moved, slightly more modern, and particularly the multiplayer, it's a little bit Call of Duty-ified in the sense that, Earl was saying, you get points for everything, which I think is awesome, because then it's not it adds a lot more, it opens it up to a lot more different gameplay styles.
Yeah,
and then also the loadouts, it's not like Call of Duty, you can't load out with a sniper rifle, for example. They're all just your standard rifles, and then it's do you like battle rifles better? Do you like assault rifles better? And it's those are the loadout weapons, and then the power weapons are still power weapons on the map, or you can get them from racking up all your points.
The main problem I have is the perks, because it's this guy has played longer than you, so he gets his shields recharged faster. Cool.
Yeah, but you unlock them all, pretty quickly, and you even get...
That's not the point, though, is the fact that, the whole point about Halo was always about having a very level playing field, and that's what I enjoyed the most about it. You know, I kind of go in, and I was the best of the two guys that went into a fight, you know, and I'm rewarded for it because I'm still alive. Instead of, he had some fucking bullshit because he's played this game longer than you.
I mean, the reality is that modern shooters need carry on sticks.
And this is what happens when you make multiplayer games that are just Skinner boxes, and I don't like it.
I don't think you need... I mean, the Halo Reach and Halo 3 didn't really have carrot on the sticks. I mean,
I didn't play them as long as I'm going to play Halo 4.
Well, you don't know that yet. You could get bored of Halo 4.
I mean, that's entirely true, but I didn't play either of them for very long. I played them for a few weeks.
I guess I'm in a different boat then, because I was playing Reach up until last week. And 3 until Reach came out and all that other fun jazz. But, I think the core gameplay is still there, and that's honestly, at the end of the day, I think that's what matters most. I do hope that they roll out more freefall modes, because it is... I mean, I play with friends anyhow. It's the only way I ever play these games. But it would be nice to kind of have something where you can dick around and not just have, these certain goals, regicide or... What's the other one? Oh, Shud. There isn't much in the way of new multiplayer modes for teams, though. There is.
No, I will say I find it really interesting. They've added Team SWAT since launch, which is a staple of older games. But I feel like Team SWAT feels like Call of Duty in the Halo skin, because everyone has no shields, and then the Big Team Slayer feels like Battlefield Halo. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, I've always hated Team SWAT because no radar and then everything kills you. You have to get a headshot. You can't shoot the person behind their head because for some reason that doesn't count.
You can. It just takes an extra shot or two then.
Yeah, usually the people turn around by the time it's...
But again, that's just like Call of Duty. If you get a headshot, it's one shot. If you shoot the body, it's a few.
Yeah, but I mean, what I mean is if you get a headshot from behind the person, it's still a headshot.
Well, oh, yeah, your head's still there.
Then SWAT, it's not always that. You have to, shoot them from the front. If you shoot them from the back, it doesn't always...
I haven't found that, but...
Maybe you just need to get better.
I will be the first to tell you that I've never been good with long-range weapons. I hate snipers in most games, except for probably Gears of War.
Gears sniper is filthy.
You can always use a Gears shotgun. You only need those two guns and you're good to go for the game.
I do want to bring up one more thing with Halo 4, and I think it kind of goes a little bit to what Daniel's saying, what are they trying to do to differentiate themselves? And that comes in the Spartan Ops mode, I think. That's completely different, completely unique, and the thing I was most stoked for going into this, and I have to say I'm completely disappointed so far. Granted, there's only been two episodes, but what was promised was a weekly slate of story-driven, basically a story-driven cooperative campaign. What it really is you get a really
awesome...
Doesn't
it just reuse maps in the single player?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
That's really bad. And even, I saw, even, I was watching within, I was watching the quick look, and you cannot lose. What?
And even within Spartan Ops itself, like, it reuses maps between episodes sometimes.
Oh, no.
Which is, really disappointing. And also, as awesome as the cutscenes are you get every week, like, as far as the actual gameplay of the story, like, gameplay episodes, like, there's not much there. There's, like, a little thing at the beginning of each mission, but it's basically, like, you know, kill all the Covenant or, you know, like, it's not... There is very little story whatsoever there.
That's a shame.
So, I mean, it's interesting.
The thing
it's
is,
like,
they took Firefight out for that. That's a shame.
Yeah, I would prefer Firefight because there isn't... Like, it's fun. It's a nice... I mean, it's...
It's not bad. It was just not what I...
I mean, it's... Because each mission's made... You can do it in, like, under 10 minutes. It's like 5-10 minutes long. And usually there's very not much of a challenge. At least the ones I've done, you pretty much get pretty well stocked up early on and just multiply.
Well, you can't lose. You can do it on Legendary. You can infinitely respawn. Doesn't matter who dies when. He just respawns you. So,
who knows? Maybe they'll come out with more interesting stuff. But right now, it's just a nice little fun. Like, we just say it when we know somebody has to go real quick. We need one more game.
I like that it's a little bit different than, you know, the campaign or the multiplayer, but, like, it's just not... It's not the draw I expected it to be.
Yeah, and you don't even have to work together like you did in Firefight, where, you know, like, I played with friends, and we just go our own separate ways, and we just kind of meet up whenever. So, yeah, there's that.
Agree. I would prefer Firefight also.
Except I wouldn't... I would rather they go back to the original Firefight and not the one in Reach.
Oh, definitely.
I don't know why they ever got rid of the one from ODST, but I guess people didn't like having to spend an hour on one mission.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those people.
I thought that was part of the fun. Like, granted, it always sucked because if you ever played with me, you know my internet connection usually sucks for online games. So that would be a pain. But it was fun. You know, you have the sense of camaraderie with your friends when there's three of you, four of you working together for an hour. And you have to watch each other's backs. And, you know, like, great, that ass guy's in that mission. He has to, like, kill off all these enemies so you can all come back and get that ass rally. There's something to it. And I don't think the 15-minute one they did in Reach really caught that.
The only issue I have with it really is that, and it's the same thing with Horde and Gears or in Nazi Zombies, is that you have to go through that same slow build up in the beginning every time, you know, and like trudge through. Like, if you want to get further than you were, you got to play through the whole hour, you know, like.
Yeah,
and then after that one, pretty much I'm one session and done with those modes. But that, I mean, that's just me personally.
Well, ODST, you have to do all of them. I think each of them you have to compete with friends to get the achievements. So, yeah. So I think that's it for Halo for now. We'll probably be back next week with more impressions. They seem to be rolling out modes like once a week or so. I assume nobody here bought Call of Duty.
Ha.
I've got Natural Selection 2, if you want me to tell you about
that.
We
gotta get Adrian back on the podcast.
That's just the same. We gotta get and explain to us why he bought the game for quote-unquote research. so he could disprove those great reviews. It's a very backwards way of justifying it, but... I guess, real quick, before we go on to what else people... I will talk about, what is it? Paper Mario Sticker Star, which is the quote-unquote big game for the 3DS this holiday season. And, I mean, if you've played Paper Mario, you've probably played this game already. There are some radical changes, but at the core, it's still Paper Mario. It's still a time...
But with stickers!
It's with stickers, which does... It's kind of like Resident Evil, the old school Resident Evil, where you have to manage your inventory because certain stickers take up more room than others. but
wait,
they have
stickers make a game next gen? Is it next gen?
It's next gen stickers. They have shiny stickers and they have flashy stickers and rainbow stickers. I'm not even kidding. Those are like, that's how you can tell. Like, I think that so far the levels are worn out, normal, shiny, and flashy are the four levels for a sticker. But yeah, but I haven't run into this situation yet. I'm afraid I'm going to at some point. But the stickers are the only way you can battle. So I'm afraid that at some point I'm going to run out of stickers during a battle. And I don't know. I don't think there's a. I assume you either have to bail from the battle or, I guess, reload or something. There's no sidekicks in here, but they make it up by having a lot of talkie toads and stuff like that and some interesting side characters. Fantastic music, nice setting, world. There's really not much to say. If you've played Paper Mario, you know what to expect. If you haven't, it's a fun RPG. It's not the most complex or difficult RPG series of all time. It's what I usually call these my first RPGs. They're fun if you just want to kind of get the basics. Especially this one, which kind of does away with all the RPG elements. You don't level up, you don't gain XP.
What?
Yeah, so, battles mean nothing in this game, technically speaking. You don't gain XP from them, you don't gain experience, you don't get, you know, anything from them.
You
so
get items?
You can get drops from enemies and stuff like that. For the most part, though, you can pretty much just run around and avoid the enemies. I guess you, there are some, you know, like mini bosses and boss battles, which are, you're forced to do. But, I mean, sometimes you have to, there's certain enemies that you have to battle to get certain stickers. Like the bombs, you get the bomb stickers. Koopa Troopers give you the turtle shells. Under Sombrero side, Shy Guys give you hats and stuff like that. So there are special stickers that, you know, enemies give you. But for the most part, you don't have to do battles because there's no reason to. I just find that the core battle system is so engaging and fun that I do them anyhow just because I enjoy doing it. And part of it is also because I get a new sticker, so in order to make room for old, to make room, I use the stickers in battle so I have more room. And the game's pretty generous at giving you, having stickers all throughout the world so that you can always kind of replenish your stuff. You start off with 2 pages of stickers, and you get a third one pretty early on. I just finished the first world, and that granted me a fourth sticker. There are, you know, there's the normal jump, hammer, fire flowers, turtle shells, but you also get what they call things stickers, which are the more, like, your super moves. You get, like, a scissors, which goes, and it will cut up everything and does massive damage. It actually finishes the first boss in one hit. You can get like the Cataluck, which is like a giant cat statue that drops down on your enemies like 4 or 5 times, does massive damage. Fans, which throws people away, etc., etc. So that's basically like the game's versions of super moves. There's nothing else to say about this game. So, Chad, you said you have been cheating on StarCraft 2 with another game.
I am a dirtbag.
Yep, you are.
I mean, we've always kind of known there was a level of dirtbag there, but I've gone beyond. So I'm playing League of Legends now. Which, if you don't follow the StarCraft 2 scene very closely, which I know none of you do, there's been a lot of debate right now about what these MOBA games are doing better than StarCraft II is, and why games like League of Legends are getting so, like, hundreds of thousands of viewers compared to 10 or 15,000 for major StarCraft tournaments.
I reckon it's just because they're easier to watch.
Well, that's one thing.
Because there's a lot of terminology that's thrown around in StarCraft II tournaments and build orders and stuff. You don't need to know any of that for MOBA games.
Well, you kind of do, though. I mean,
well,
there's a whole lot
really,
of that.
Well, you don't really. Like, particle effects come out of one character, go into another, life bar goes down.
But, well, you could distill anything to such a simple level. Like, StarCraft is make shit and have more of it than your opponent and kill them.
Yeah, but StarCraft has a fairly large, by large I mean like 15 minutes maybe at the start, where it's just like plonking buildings down. Oh, he went and spied on the other guy. By sending, sacrificing
league,
a unit.
15 minutes are all farming creeps.
No. Because if you watch competitive MOBAs, the entire game can be decided in the first. Games have ended in the first 15 minutes.
Okay, maybe that's true. I don't watch much League. Anyway, so yeah, because of that, I was like, okay, everyone's talking about these things that LoL is doing better, like it's match spectating, and the fact that if you get kicked out of a game because you lagged out or whatever, you can just log back in and then join your game that's still in progress, which I think is amazing.
Yeah,
and
if you,
there's all these things.
You should see it in Dota 2, mate.
Everything surrounding these games like seems to be doing esports better than StarCraft is doing it. And so it's like, okay, I want to figure out what this is all about. Like, clearly they're doing some things right, so I'll play this.
Incidentally, Ted, I love how this is completely different from the story you told us earlier.
Well, I didn't even tell really the backstory.
Yeah, but the reason why you said you started playing it is completely different.
Well, that's, you see, on one hand, there's, like, logical reasoning, which I love, and on the other hand, there's, like, maybe there was an impetus or a factor or two that helped me along that decision path, perhaps. Maybe. There was some liquor involved, okay? Shut up.
When isn't there liquor involved for you? I would think you're immune to that habit now.
Anyway, that's, you, stop distracting me. This tangent sucks. Go away. So yeah, I was like, okay, I'll install this. It's free. I like free things, so I'll give it a shot. That way, basically the same reason why I watch Twilight, so I could be more informed about it when I make fun.
That's your excuse?
Yeah, it's because I want to be able to viably make fun of this, and I don't want people to come at me saying, oh, you can't make fun of it, you've never played it or seen it. It's like,
but then you wasted your time watching it.
I'll play this, and then I can totally talk shit about it all I want. And then it, somewhere along the line, became fun. I don't know how, and I don't know why, because mechanically and strategically, everything about it is simpler than StarCraft. It's like, everything about League, and I'm assuming Dota's like this as well, everything surrounding the game is infinitely better than StarCraft.
It's a lot more upfront with information.
And so I've just been playing a lot of this lately.
So a couple of questions for you, Chad. Who do you main at the moment?
Back and forth between ADC, Ezreal, and AP Midlocks.
Okay, that's quite cool. Are you actually going to give Dota a try? Because it seriously is...
Oh, I'll give it a shot, yeah.
The only reason why they've put some good spectator stuff into League of Legends is because they were like, oh shit, Valve has done this, and it's really good.
Well, you've played both, right? Fairly, like, is jumping from one to the other feasible?
There's a bit of a learning curve when you jump to Dota, because they add things in, like, when you die, you lose money to stop you from... And when you when you're controlling your character in League of Legends and you tell them to turn around, they do it pretty much instantly.
Yeah,
it's not the case in Dota 2, and it's a very slower pace. It's a slower paced game, so it takes a while to get used to that. But once you get used to it,
feels
to me. Dota 2 is even slower than League of Legends.
Wow.
Yeah, I would give Dota 2 a try anyway. You can't really lose anything, and the spectator stuff in Dota 2 is phenomenal. You can see where you go into the spectator into the game, and you click on a player, and you can see where they are clicking. You see their cursor. That's how good
that's
it is.
Cool. StarCraft does that too, actually.
So
except
yeah,
you can't just join a game in progress and like watch it. That's so cool. I log on, see, oh hey, my friend's playing a game. Let's see what he's up to. Right click on his name, I'm watching the game.
But you're obviously one of those people that can put up with the mechanics of those kinds of games. I'm not a person that can put up with the mechanics of those kinds of games. So you should get into Dota 2 fine.
Okay. Yeah, now that I'm like not an anti-MOBA elitist anymore, I will absolutely try Dota. It makes me angry, because I talked just mountains of shit every time there was a pro StarCraft player that switched over to League of Legends. I was just relentless.
And now you're one of them.
The same thing. I am the worst hypocrite.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's fun. It's not necessarily super balanced at all. There's a lot of insidious stuff, like costumes for your characters oftentimes cost more than the characters themselves. Like,
I think the monetization of League of Legends is fairly silly, and Valve have got it right in Dota, because obviously there's a lot more characters, and you buy bits of costumes so you can customize. So they'll only be like 99 cents each.
Yes, see, that's... a lot of the kind of boardroom stuff going on with LoL is questionable, but...
Yeah.
As a board game, I look at it a lot like Minesweeper. In that, like, when I want to sit down and seriously play a video game, I'm going to play StarCraft 2.
Yeah. But
if I'm, like, chatting on Skype or, like, browsing the internet or whatever, then I'll play League, because I don't really need to necessarily pay that close attention to what I'm doing. So it's my new Minesweeper, basically.
I would probably be more forgiving on LoL if I didn't have to grind to get characters, but I do, and I just can't deal with that. I'm not doing it.
Your characters, like, I don't...
Like, if Valve has put forward a much better business model, I mean, they may be loss leadering, but it's a much fairer business model on the consumer. You know, I don't feel like I'm pressured to put any money into that game at all, and I would actually do it if I had any interest in it. And, you know, I can get all the characters and I can just experiment however I want, whereas I can't in League of Legends. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm not going to bother.
So how does the character unlocking work then? Do they, like, do...
In League of Legends or Dota 2?
Well, I know how it works in League, because...
In Dota 2, there is no character unlocking. You have all characters all the time for nothing.
Oh, what? So what do you pay for?
You pay for bits of customization for your character.
Really?
And for games, you can buy different announcers, you can buy different couriers. You'll buy a headpiece, and that will cost you maybe 99 cents. But obviously, there are going to be ones that are more expensive if you want to use those. And you would have had to have bought a pack with an invite in it if you wanted to get access to it, but obviously you don't now, because I gave you a key a while ago. So yeah, it's a much bit, like, it's just customization stuff. It is literally just customization stuff, and it's very cheap.
That's like
a lot
of
it.
Completely different model than what LoL's doing.
And can you see why now I can't be doing with LoL's? Because I don't have to. If I want to play a character in Dota 2, I'll just play it. There's nothing to stop me. And if I like that character, oh, that looks cool. Oh, that's only £1. I'll buy it. Whereas in League of Legends, I have to buy the character, either with my time or with real money. And then, if I want to, I have to pay more on top of that.
Yeah, that's certainly the way they've monetized it is not ideal for the consumer. But looking at it from a pure, like, gameplay passive way to spend some time, it's pretty good in that respect. And so, given my stance on LoL in that regard, I feel like I'll probably enjoy Dota just as much, if not more.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Are we all done with that? Yay, okay, I can wake up from my nap.
That we play video games that require thought and tactics instead of games where the battling actually kind of doesn't even matter.
I'm okay with that. And the apology accepted.
Apologize there accidentally. Fuck!
Is anybody else saying anything?
I played Natural Selection 2.
How is that?
It's a RTS FPS hybrid. It's criticized for its steep learning curve. It doesn't really have a steep learning curve. You just need to sort of get in and play as, like, the Marines for a little bit and understand how they work. Like, it's not overly complex. It's just, I think the biggest problem with the game is it has no tutorials, pretty much. So you've got to sort of learn as you play. But once you get the hang of it, it's really cool. It's really tense. There is nothing like playing as an alien, cutting the power to a room, which turns off all the lights, and then jumping off of off the ceiling into a marine and biting his ass to death. It's great. I love it.
Okay. Does not sound morbid at all.
It's basically what you would imagine out of an FPS-RTS hybrid, but kind of like the movie Aliens.
Okay. So I think that's it for this week's new games. There isn't much in news, but there is one giant thing that we should talk about, since we didn't mention it last week, is the GTA 5 stuff.
That's another Grand Theft Auto, right?
Yeah.
Conflicted on this because it's making me want to buy it again, despite the fact I've never enjoyed any GTA ever. I keep making the same mistake.
This is the thing is, Rockstar, they really know how to make trailers.
They do. I think they're the best trailer making company in the industry.
I don't know. Featherlight's pretty good. They make horse trailers. It's a trailer joke.
Uh-oh. Well, we all got that one.
It's a trailer pun.
But yeah, they do. They make it, and they have interesting characters, so it plays well in trailers.
Yeah. If I want opinions on good trailers, I'll go to the South.
You're just going to continue going until you get a home run there, huh?
One of them has to land. You throw enough spaghetti at the wall, some of it's going to stick.
But aside from Chad's bad jokes, it is interesting. You have three main characters. I'm not huge on the fact that they all seem to be stereotypes. You have the angry redneck.
Stereotypes in GTA, no way.
Yeah, but you would think they would... I thought they started to get away from that with Marston in Red Dead Redemption. Cole in Noir is kind of a stereotype. He's kind of that clean-shaven home country boy. But
then all GTA games.
Until the end.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest problems with Noir. Is like he's kind of given this character arc, and then it's like all diminished in this moment because they needed a plot twist that didn't really seem like it worked with him.
Yeah, I think... we'll see, though, because we haven't seen many of the supporting characters, and that's where usually Rockstar breaks the mold even more. But, I mean, I think we all agree that they're really good at making interesting characters. In
Brucey!
General.
Yeah, interesting characters and interesting trailers. Not necessarily interesting games, but...
Nope.
From the Game Informer preview, it does sound like they're going back to the well and they're changing everything up, making everything better, and, you know, they're fixing the combat, they're fixing the shooting, they're fixing the driving, so...
Well, they just say they're doing all of those
things. That's what I said. Just because you fix it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be better, but it can't get much worse.
You know what I think I love most about the GTA 5 trailer? Is... It reminds me of GTA San Andreas. Like, just the environments and the way they've done them. It looks like GTA San Andreas, even though obviously it looks so much better. And I love that. Like, that's what Los Santos looks like. And I can't wait to actually go back to Los Santos. Even if I am playing as, you know, stereotypes and stuff. And maybe if it is the same old GTA, I'm going to be in Los Santos again. And I can pretend that this is San Andreas.
And a more fleshed out Los Santos, it seems like.
Yeah.
By the way,
is there any doubt that this is going to be co-op?
No.
At this point, I think we're all...
It'd be interesting if it was, because, I mean...
I think it has to be, right? There's three main protagonists, and you can play as either of them at any time. It's screaming co-op to me.
It would be a big... I mean, it's not... The franchise already has multiplayer, but it would be a big thing for it. I was going to say... I mean, at least personally speaking, when they say that this game world's bigger than Red Dead Redemption and L.A. Noir and GTA 4 combined, that doesn't really give me confidence.
Saying that apparently that includes interiors and verticality and not... And also just the box, like how high you can fly the jets and stuff like that, and you know there's underwater ocean stuff that's all included in that measurement.
As long as there's stuff to do in the world, I don't really care how big it is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like a lot of open world games don't get that notion. It's like, we're big, we're vast. There's nothing for you to do here except for find this little trench.
And that was one of the things with GTA 4 was, I mean, yeah, there is stuff to do, but I don't really want to do them. Like, I don't want to go bowling. I don't want to watch TV. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to take my cousin out to a strip club. Just, you know, give me some interesting stuff to do. Like, in Red Dead Redemption, when you were, like, there was a shootout going on the side of the road, and you think, oh, what's going on over here? I'm going to check this out. That's the kind of thing that I want to see happen in GTA 5.
Yeah, either that or what L.A. Noire did, and that's just kind of make driving a non-issue if you don't want to do it. Take me here. Like, GTA 4 had the taxi system, which was kind of semi-idea.
Because it got to the point in GTA 4 where I would, because it was quicker, I would just get in a taxi and skip.
Yeah. It's
like,
you know,
if you're going to say your world's this big, make me want to be in it and give me something to do in it. Otherwise,
yeah, I mean,
it's a waste of time.
One of the things they did say is that they're focusing on having more well-rounded mini-games instead of having a bunch of activities to do that may not be enjoyable. So I hope they really do deliver on that, especially being, and you know, especially after playing Saints Row, which had so much variety. And, you know, the Saints Row is that Saints Row can go batshit insane because that's what Saints Row is. But GTA still kind of wants to remain relatively grounded.
Well, the thing about Saints Row that GTA could have always learned from is Saints Row is not afraid to give you new toys to play with, whereas GTA was always like, oh, you've got to wait until that you've unlocked a third island to go and fly planes. No, you've got to stay here for now, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's coming out spring, which I'm pretty sure if you had any two brain cells, you could have figured that out. I still don't know why people got into their heads that it was coming out this holiday season. And do we have any doubt that when they say spring, they mean May?
May, yeah.
March, April, May.
I think April is the earliest, but I would assume May, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's their month. They have no competition there, especially the way next year is set up so far.
May. Yeah, okay. Everything seems to be February, April, March.
Yeah. So, there's that. What else was there this week? PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale announced their first two DLC characters for free, which is Kat from Gravity Rush and Emmett from Starhawk. Don't know if Tux sounds so excited.
These are the characters that we just created here. Have them in there. Just put them in there, pretty much.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's going to be, that's, I think that was, that's an issue with that game in general, especially being that we're 2 days from launch, and I feel like it's not.
Well, really?
It's
what?
It's not 6 days.
Hello.
Well, Sony's been
kind of hard to follow a brand new console, and the two previous weeks having the two biggest games.
Yeah, like I said, when they had it in October, it was the prime time for it, and they hate it now, and it's like after everything, and it's like so far down the radar, and Sony's not helping themselves. Sony has released Super Infinite Carding, Wonderbook, and now PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale this month, and I'm fairly certain that. Of those, I don't know, like, there's no kind of, like, outside of the internet hype. There's no, I haven't seen any commercials, I haven't seen any advertisements. There aren't any reviews for the game yet.
I think their thinking in regards to a lot of that is that there's not much crossover between the type of people who are buying Wonderbook and the type who are buying, say, Call of Duty.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you want to advertise it.
I'm not saying it's a smart idea. I'm just saying that's the only way I can possibly rationalize it.
I'm curious what Daniel thinks about it, and I wish Martin was here, because apparently they're making a bigger push for Wonderbook in Europe than the bigger deal.
I haven't seen anything about Wonderbook, but then I don't have a TV, so I couldn't really tell you. If they're going to advertise it, well, I don't really go out, and where I live there aren't really any billboards around, so I can't tell you, but I think that, I mean, obviously, the kind of thing that Wonderbook is, if you're going to advertise it, it would be on TV. You would advertise it on TV.
Yeah, definitely.
But you would think that there would be articles on Destructoid saying, you know, this is the new Wonderbook ad in Europe or whatever, and I haven't seen any of those.
Would there, though, because, like, that's not going to really get many.
I don't know. Like, they seem to do that with most things like that. So, I don't know. But I'm really not the person to ask because I don't watch TV and I don't live in an area that's heavily billboarded, so...
Okay. This is the isolated area of Europe, apparently. But yeah, I mean, as far as we go on this side of the pond, I haven't seen much. It was, like, even now, I think there's only been, like, a handful of reviews for Wonder Book, and they've been pretty decent, not spectacular, but, you know, people are like, the technology works, and there's some interesting ideas there. But it seems like either Sony has no intentions of marketing, or they just kind of hope for the that their fans will carry these games through the holiday season. And the games they are advertising, like Call of Duty Declassified, aren't really living up to the expectations, so... We shall see. But, like I was saying, it's nice that they're offering the first two characters for free. It encourages you to buy the game early, because I believe it's only for the first 2 weeks, so you want to get the game so you can get these characters free. And it's nice that they're supporting their newer IPs with Gravity Rush, which was just launched in like June of this year, and Starhawk, which was launched this year as well. Though I doubt we'll see much of a sequel since that studio closed down.
Do you know what releasing this game at this timing accomplishes? Makes me think, gee, there's a new Nintendo console, which means we're going to get a new Smash Brothers pretty soon.
I don't know about soon, since they didn't start working
Shut
on
up, it'll be soon.
We won't get into that. I think that's one of the biggest problems with this game, is it is in the shadows of Smash Brothers, which is fair and unfair at the same time, because it is a really tough game to kind of get out of the shadow of. But yeah, it's been, I mean, to their point, it's been 4 years, almost 4 years since Brawl came out, so they have a huge window. You know, it's like people who are craving a new Smash Brothers, and who have, you know, it's going to be another 5-6 years before we get a Smash Brothers sequel from Brawl, not from today. So yeah, they had the potential. My thing is, it's like you launch after the Wii U, you know, consoles are a big thing for people, especially with, you know, like Nintendo and Sonic and All-Star Racing, where you kind of have the mascot things already out there for people. And then you launch the week of Black Friday, which means that when people go shopping on Thursday and Friday, your game's going to be $60 when I can get Black Ops 2 and Halo 4 for $30. Which are you going to pick up? So, if anything, I would have just suggested them until next year, after they pushed it out of October, but next year wouldn't have done them any favors. Maybe first week of December, when you kind of get away from that and you can have that whole month to yourself.
And it's kind of close to Christmas as well, so that might help.
Yeah, and it's the type of game that you kind of, yeah, and this is something that I think Sony and Sony's fans have issues with, is that, to me, PlayStation All-Stars, and Smash Bros. Does this too, is a great game to sell to families and people. But to Sony and to their audience, they want to make sure it's a game for them and just them. So I think Sony didn't want to put it in the holidays, because then it becomes like a kid's toy. It's something you pick up for your kids, because they like Ratchet and Clank, they like Uncharted, they like, you know, Sly Cooper and stuff like that.
Well, and it is, it is the quote-unquote Sony exclusive title for this holiday.
How sad
Little Big
is that?
Planet carding and Wonder Book. But this is like, out of those, this is the biggest one.
Yeah, and I think it has. I actually think Wonder Book has potential to sell better, but I think this had a huge potential. But Sony doesn't seem to be really behind it.
They've been pushing it a lot on the, for whatever it's worth, they've been pushing a lot on the fighting game circuit. I guess it's not one I follow, but I guess they've been at the Wednesday night fights and all those tournaments. And
oh yeah, it's been a huge, but it's kind of like selling to a niche of a niche. The fighting game community makes up a small portion of the gaming community.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's kind of a curious strategy, because I think Smash's biggest strength, while people do play it very competitively, is that it appeals to a very broad.
And not to mention, is Smash is not, like, I reckon the fighting game community, although Smash is a fighting game, I reckon the fighting game community is a separate audience to the people that play Smash competitively, because the fighting game people want really hardcore fighting games like Super Street Fighter, you know?
But they want Smash. They had they had Mei and they had Brawl for an extent. But what happens is that audience, the fighting game community, as we have seen over the years, is kind of
poisonous.
Let's go with that. I was going to say douches, but it's a very inclusive group, and there's a lot of infighting because, you know, this is why stuff like tiers come out and rankings and all that other jibber jabber. So it's a very, you know, it's like something trying to face itself, and they don't really know the rules to face themselves, but they're doing it anyhow. So it's a very poisonous group, and I think just being associated with them, you kind of go off this ultra niche, like, we're for this hardcore fighting group, which is fine if you have an audience, or like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, you know, those things had audiences before fighting games became a separate thing. Sony's trying to build up an audience with this game, and to say, like, we're only going to sell it to these people who may or may not like our games for this, and that, instead of saying, like, we're going to, you know, throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. And see, you know, like, we can get kids, we can get adults, we can get people who grew up on PlayStation, which, at this point, is a lot of people. It's been 16 years since the original PlayStation came out. So, there's an audience for it, but they don't seem to be actively going after them. But maybe we'll come back. Maybe somebody will pick up PlayStation All-Stars and we can get a review of it or something. But is there anything else you folks want to talk about before we wrap for this week?
Not particularly.
Okay. Then, we'll be back next week, hopefully. I mean, it's Thanksgiving weekend, and that's a headache in itself for family and friends and all this other stuff. Well, at least for us, you Canadians and Brits.
Slowpoke.
Our Thanksgiving is timed perfectly. It's, you know, it's a break between Halloween and Christmas. What have you folks been doing since your Thanksgiving?
Partying.
Well, how is that different than any other
Thanksgiving? There's a Thanksgiving in Canada?
Yeah, it's October. Yeah. I think the first one in October.
Honestly, didn't even know that.
It's about a month earlier. More than a month earlier. About a month and a half earlier, I guess.
Yeah, I think the first or second Monday in October. But, yeah. I mean, you folks don't even have great foods like we do. Nor do you have an awesome sale.
We have the same food. Like, exactly the same.
Liar. But, yeah.
Way to copy this, guys. So original.
Okay, yeah. You just keep talking shit. We'll go down to Washington and burn the White House to the ground again.
That's the one thing you folks can talk about, and that happened like 200 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's still awesome.
That was before you were even in Canada.
I don't care. It's still awesome.
It's like the one claim to fame they have. Like, remember that one time you burned down your capital?
Hey. They make some
burned down your house.
Make some killer maple syrup, all right?
We make the best. Milk. Not to mention, you need us way more than we need you, because we have more oil and fresh water than anybody else.
I'm sure if we need anything from you, we'll just come and take it. Well, we don't bother you because you're too close and it's not worth the effort right now.
Because you need us.
But if push comes to shove and we really needed you for something, we'll take it. With no problem. I mean, your army's pretty weak. Yes,
this is my hand-me-downs from everybody else. And that's actually true. We bought an old Russian submarine a couple years ago. You're buying discount shit from the Russians. That's when you know something's gone wrong.
This podcast has officially completely degenerated.
That's how you stock an army. You buy bulk at Costco. But yeah,
yeah,
so we'll be back.
That's pretty good. Man, I love Costco.
There you go. We'll be back next week. So for Chad, Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Through Wood, episode 89.